Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name, actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat, IGN's Nintendo podcast. My name is Philip Musin, and remember that you can catch us live every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time on IGN.com. You can catch the episode first there, and then the next day on YouTube at 3 o'clock. So make sure you come to IGN if you want to see NVC a day early. But anyway, today I am joined by Per Schneider.
What's up, Philip?
Brian Altano.
Hello there.
And Casey DeFritas.
Hello.
So good to have you guys back here. Very, very nice.
I promise I'm going to put my switch on.
Yeah, it's like
Brian's very busy right now. He's in the middle of playing a top secret game. Actually, no, I guess we could say what.
Yeah, I'm playing Dead Cells.
Yeah.
God damn, that's a good game.
Okay, all right, don't say too much.
All right, embargoed.
Yes, it is under embargo. And
God damn, that's a blank
game. God damn, that's a game.
We are going to review it, so make sure you keep your eyes open for that. It should definitely be on your radar. But before we get into all of the crazy stuff, let's just go over the run of show real quick. There are new Splatoon 2 amiibo out, which is really exciting. Octopath Traveler is selling like crazy. It's selling off the shelves. Super Smash Brothers. The file size has been revealed for that. Ooh, I love when these guys mess with me while I'm throwing the show. It makes it so much easier. Sakurai's back in Famitsu talking about Smash Brothers. Not a bunch of like newsy tidbits, but there is still some juicy little nuggets of information that I'm excited to share with you guys there. Also, the Kong Skull Island director and upcoming director of Metal Gear is talking about his idea for if he was going to make a Metroid movie, what that would be like. So that would be cool to check out.
Super cool.
And then also, there are a ton of games that we just have backlogged and we're really excited to share with you guys today as well. Let's go ahead and jump straight into the Splatoon 2 amiibo, as you guys saw with Pear and Brian just kind of harassing me with them. there they are. Pear has them unboxed. I've got them in the box right here. I haven't opened mine just yet, but it's Pearl and Marina, which is really cool. We've been waiting for these a while. They came out like on July 13th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Splatoon fan, definitely make sure you pick these up because they give you some really, really cool gear in the game.
Good design.
Octoling or Inkling? That was the recent Splatfest.
Yeah.
Which one would you pick?
Octoling.
Octoling. Everyone in Japan picked Octoling.
Did they really?
So I want to be on the winning team.
Okay. Oh, wow. Octoling.
Yeah. I mean, it's a global Splatfest, which is like the first time they're actually doing that. And word is that most Japanese players are picking Octolings. So
Marina is the Octoling and Pearl is the Inkling in this duo of the hosts.
Yeah, it's really, really
pretty easy choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty easy choice there. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and jump over to the Octopath Traveler sales. Now, who's playing Octopath?
I just started last night, so yes.
Yes. All right, we're all playing Octopath. I'm about like 15 hours in right now to my game. Yeah, so nice. I played a whole bunch over this past weekend. And man, I am so in love with this game. I had no idea that I would be like this enthralled by a game that looks like it came straight out of like the SNES era, essentially. But obviously, it's got all these modern touches to it, like the volumetric lighting. We did mention a little bit, or we talked a little bit about Octopath on last week's episode. But since then, apparently, we're not the only ones playing Octopath Traveler. A lot of other people are, because it's incredibly difficult to get your hands on a physical copy of this game. It's completely sold out on Amazon. They're actually back-ordered for like 1 to 2 months.
I pre-ordered the special edition on Amazon. Still no shipping date.
Oh,
really?
Like, yeah, at pre-order, it said day and date, and now it's like, we don't have a date yet. Goodbye.
Oh,
that's
man.
Really disappointing. I incredibly regret not pre-ordering a collector's edition.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool. I don't know if it's $100 cool. I checked out the one we have here, but it's really cool, the little diorama.
Yeah, I really like the pop-up book. It's cool. You can't really like put it on display unless you like put something else in there to keep the pages like folded up.
You constantly blow on the pages.
You just blow on the pages.
Yeah. Just it has a fan in front of
it. Little, two fans.
I was going to say, there's an invention for that.
Find like the perfect physics balance.
Did it come with a soundtrack?
Yes. Yeah, it did, which is really good.
How many tracks are on the soundtrack?
I actually haven't opened it yet. I'm trying to keep mine sealed and mint.
That's a very specific question.
Well, because a lot of times the soundtracks that come with collector's editions only come with like 5 to 10 tracks, and games could have, you know, dozens and dozens, 20, 30, 50 tracks. Like, we'll disappointed. Well,
it's like Breath of the Wild.
Editions. Yeah, I'm always super disappointed with my Zelda collector's edition soundtracks because they have such a small selection of the music that are actually in the games.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good music in this game.
I wish they just gave you like a code to redeem online that just had all the songs. Because I understand the limitations of physical media.
Yeah.
I also understand that I don't really have a place for physical media in 2018. So I know some people still collect CDs.
Yeah, I got
good for you.
I got
a digital
them.
Code for Monster Hunter soundtrack when Monster Hunter World came out, and that one didn't even have one of the main themes of one of the main areas, and that was disappointing.
we're in a good path to bingo for this week already.
We're on an Octopath.
We got the Monster Hunter mentioned in.
But
yeah, you guys, nice work.
You guys didn't smile and nod at me while being quiet for 5 minutes. So
that's right.
Know.
Okay. We'll do that next time. Monster Hunter.
Monster Hunter
has music.
It does. Yeah.
Well, the Octopath Traveler soundtrack is super,
so
super
good.
Yeah. Mm. I highly recommend you pick it up if you're like a fan of just video game music or like classic, like, I don't know, Final Fantasy style, like battle music. Because the way it's done is just so perfect and it fits the whole setting of that game.
Yeah, and it's not repetitive at all.
No.
You can have that battle music on in the background and it not get annoying, which is very rare.
Yeah, that is rare.
It's a great game so far. I love the variety of the, you know, the player special moves, you know, the ability to have somebody follow you. Or, you know, and summon somebody in battle or to start a fight with somebody on the spot. Like, I really like that you know, the characters, the scenarios are similar, but they all have their own special little touches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I brought up this game called Life Alive, which is sitting on my desk. It's a Square title from way back when that never came out in the West. And that game was split into lots of different chapters, and each chapter actually played differently too. So each chapter had a different creator, had a different theme. One was wrestling, one was set in China, one was set on a spaceship. And those all had different gameplay systems. And like after playing one of the sections for a couple of minutes, you're like, oh man, I really like the other system better. And then you're stuck with the whole story with an inferior battle system. Mm-hmm. Whereas like this one, it feels well-tuned, well-tweaked. Doesn't have quite that variety, but it's just a really charming and cool game.
Yeah, I guess the biggest criticism that it's been getting is that like each path, they don't really like intersect with each other very often, which I guess is a little disappointing. But at, you know, at the same time, I'm still like really enjoying switching between the different paths. And I found that actually eliminates a lot of the tedious grinding that you experience, like especially in games like Bravely Default, which was this developer's like previous RPG or this same team's previous RPG.
Yeah. Yep.
So like, you know, I got to a point in Theron's story where I think it was like the end of chapter 2. There's a boss you have to fight. You have to be like level 22. And I think I was only level 16. So I went to go play Primrose's story, leveled my way all the way up to that final boss, then went back to Theron's boss, got him, and then went back to Primrose's story and got that boss. So like, it's so cool being able to level up in that game because it feels like you're always working towards something. It's not just a constant grind.
Yeah. Right. No, there's not just a powerful boss and then you can't do anything and you have to run around in the field. Yeah. You actually can switch to a different path and complete stuff.
Yeah, cool. Exactly.
Yeah, it's nice.
Either way, people who collect physical versions of games on Switch can't really buy this game right now. Correct?
That's
kind of a pain. I'm actually pretty surprised that they, I guess, I don't know, didn't really know what to expect with how many copies of this game they were sending out.
They were definitely playing it safe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they sold through everything that they shipped out. If you look at the sales charts, we have the numbers for Japan and UK. In Japan, Octopath is number one. It sold like 110,000 copies. And I think those might just be the physical numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, in the UK, it's number three, just under Crash Bandicoot and LEGO The Incredibles, which, by the way, both LEGO The Incredibles and Crash Bandicoot are not full price games.
Right.
But Octopath is. So if you take into account the revenue, like Octopath is definitely the most profitable game that's selling right now.
I figured it would do really well. Last week, I pulled the stats for content on IGN and I shared it out on my Twitter feed. And Fortnite's always the biggest thing right now. There's so much news around that game, so many updates, but also millions of players playing this game. Octopath was in number two, which is, you know, given that there's so many other big name brands out there, updates to big games and news, it surprised me. And
no, that's gigantic.
It's doing well. Yeah.
Is that including wiki content?
No, not including wikis. Yeah. Okay.
So just
kind of like game, you know, news, game preview, reviews, traffic. Yeah.
Interesting.
When you add wikis, everything is Elder Scrolls and Grand Theft Auto
Pokemon
5.
Quest.
And well, Pokemon Quest is doing incredibly well. Yeah.
The amazing divide between that is that Fortnite is on every platform. It's free. It gets new content practically daily at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, it does get new content daily. Whereas Octopath is a platform exclusive sort of niche in one genre based RPG that is kind of set in stone and the game's out now. So like, I wonder how long that'll keep going.
If the trend continues, it might be one of our more popular reviews. You know? Obviously God of War will be huge by the end of the year, but this is doing really well. So that's great. It means that there was a gap for this game on the platform that, you know, people have been waiting for an RPG like that.
I honestly, though, don't blame Square Enix for playing it safe with the physical copies, because if you look at the traffic, like, you know, leading up to launch, how many people were actually paying attention to Octopath, there weren't that many people that were that interested in it. So it's one of those games that needed to, I think, come out and then have more people talking about it for it to really gain that sort of mass appeal. And I think it slowly is, because the last real JRPG to really attract a mass audience was Persona 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that's due to a lot of like the critical or its critical reception that it received through, you know, from us and from other outlets. And on top of that, it was like nominated for awards at the Game Awards. So, I mean, maybe we'll see the same thing with Octopath. I hope so. Yeah.
I think it's the power of a really big demo.
Yeah.
And just putting that in the hands of a lot of people. I mean, that's worked for decades. And I think there's still a really fervent audience for a good demo.
Yeah.
I understand the limitations why it's difficult to make one of those and put those out there, but it helps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, being able to play the first 3 hours of a game that gets you hooked, mm-hmm. it's just... Like, why wouldn't you keep playing?
And all that's
so smart
over, right?
To carry that over. Yeah. That was really smart.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And
yeah. It's like it feels like renting something and being like, oh, I have something. I'm invested in this now. I want going. So.
Yeah. And Square Enix actually issued an apology for Brick and Mortar stores not having the physical copies in the stores anymore in Japan.
Wow.
Yeah. They came out and had an official apology. Yeah. Wow.
Well, good on them. So let's jump over to this next topic. So if you've been paying attention to the Japanese My Nintendo store, because who doesn't, right? Mm. Who doesn't go there every single day? Just me? I guess just me. okay, so they've actually released new details on the file size for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And it's interesting because it's a little bit bigger than what we're used to from an official Nintendo first-party release. It's actually 16 gigabytes, which essentially means it's going to take at least half of your Switch's internal storage, which is 32 gigabytes, if you don't have an SD card. So that means that there's definitely going to be a lot of content packed into this game because Breath of the Wild, I think, was like 13 point something gigs.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Smash is 16. Now, I mean, obviously, everyone is returning. All the characters are coming back.
Music.
I'm assuming most of the
lots
stages.
Lots of music.
Yeah, lots of music. There's some
An
new...
entire single-player campaign, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Keep wishing.
Those gigs. I mean, maybe this is a lot. This is a lot of space.
Can you imagine if they added like DLC and updates and stuff like that, how much bigger it would get?
Nintendo in general historically are wizards in terms of packing tons of data into
compression,
a small file
compression algorithm
on their own platform.
Yep.
I mean, I downloaded Wolfenstein 2 on Switch and it was like I had to delete like 15 games just to make room for it.
How big is your card?
I have a 256
game. My god.
Oh, you have the 256? Nice. Fancy pants. That's expensive.
Not really.
Really?
They were like giving them away on Amazon this week.
Yeah.
Were they like, I want the 400.
I have a 200.
I'm really upset I missed those sales. I went to buy one and they were all the deals were just no more. Done.
I was 128 so was $23 as part of Prime
Day.
Upset.
Wow. That's definitely worth it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just thought that was really interesting. Hopefully we do get a lot of DLC for this game. I'd love to have some new fighters coming in, but I think that 16 gigabytes is, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff packed in there. So get excited about that. But moving on from there. So Sakurai's latest column was actually released this week in Famitsu. And if you guys have been following that, it's sort of this like, legacy, like sort of piece that Famitsu's been putting together. Every issue that they put out, they speak with Sakurai, and they take chunks from his interview. And he spoke a little bit about how the whole like presentation for Smash Brothers at E3, and how he was nervous about possible leaks happening just before it, and just about how Nintendo employees weren't even aware of a lot of the stuff that was going on. Because if the words like "everyone is here" had leaked, then that would have totally ruined the surprise.
Yep.
So, I don't know. It's just really, really crazy to hear him talk about it. I'll put a link in the description of the video if you guys want to check out that interview.
I think that's so cool, by the way, that it didn't leak. In spite of the fact that almost everything before E3 usually does, and we're effectively robbing ourselves of that buildup and that moment. People start working on E3 press conferences like sometimes in December the year before.
Yeah.
Like I've heard that from people at like Microsoft and Sony that it's like a 6-7 month process of like planning all that out. So when you see those like photographs of a sheet of paper that have all the names on it, and I know like even like Overcooked and a bunch of other stuff leaked from through Nintendo this year.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks. And so I feel bad for that, especially people are working on it so hard. Mm-hmm. I know that being said, it's also IGN's job to report on those leaks. So we're a big part of the problem. And I'm sorry for that. But no, I think it's so cool that he was able to have that moment and get that out there. Because I know the perception on the internet and in the room and watching, you know, not my room. I was on paternity leave. My baby was just asleep. And I was like, look. And she was like, I don't care. but like seeing the videos of like Nintendo World Store, people freaking out, like it was a huge moment. So I'm glad he got to have that because he's been making these games for a long time. Somehow has never made him look older or more tired, but
he looks the same, man.
He looks like it's he's like 16.
He's Dorian Gray. It's he's got crazy. Like a picture of an old man in his kitchen who keeps aging.
It's like him and Paul Rudd. I don't get it.
He's like the perfect example of a perfectionist, I think, because like even during Treehouse Live, while they were showing off the gameplay for Smash Brothers, he was commenting about how like, oh man, I'm going to have to go back and tweak that right there, like noticing different things that he needed to go back and change. So it's just crazy like how much he's of himself he's putting into this game.
Yeah,
I think he lost something like 13 pounds or something in the last, I don't know, couple months. Just
literally put
up
something of himself in there.
Yeah. So take care of yourself, Sakurai. We love you. We definitely want you around a lot longer. So, but yeah, very exciting stuff. So next topic here is really exciting for me because I am a very massive Metroid fan. It's probably one of my most favorite Nintendo series.
Oh, I see.
Yes, yes, I am. I know I'm not the only one.
Oh, yes.
I know I'm not the only one.
Literally wearing a Metroid shirt. Like.
So Max Scoville, IGN's own Max Scoville, got a chance to interview Kong Skull Island director Jordan Vogt Roberts.
Yeah, so
yes.
Jordan has been...
You need to apologize for the pronunciation.
I apologize for pronouncing that name. And make sure to mark your bingo cards, too.
Jordan's on our Comic-Con. He did some stuff with us at Comic-Con last year. He's on our Comic-Con live show this year talking about Metal Gear. He's been basically trying to get a Metal Gear movie going for a long time. He has ideas of what that looks like. Nothing's been like sort of officially greenlit, but he's got scripts. He's got Kojima's blessing. If you follow either of these guys on Instagram, they're constantly tweeting pictures of each other, putting up pictures of each other, just hanging out. So they're working together on stuff. You know, it's not like the situation where we saw like the Uncharted movie where they were like, we're making an Uncharted movie and you know,
it's going to be about a kid and his kangaroo.
Yeah, yeah, Druckmann and Straley love it. And Druckmann was like, I've never heard of this before. Who are you?
Yeah.
This is very different. So, but yeah, he was on Up at Noon last week.
Right.
Because he was here at IGN and he gave a pitch for a Metroid movie.
Yeah, he said he's been thinking about like what it would be like if he made a Metroid movie and sort of like his take on it, which I think is genius.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a quote from that interview, and I'll put that video down in the description below too, so you guys can check it out. But this is what he said. He said, I have a pitch for a Metroid movie. They'll never let me do it. It's too crazy. It legitimately would be Samus alone. It would be a little bit of her talking to herself. And as soon as they introduce the other talking characters in those types of game movies, it totally loses everything. You put her alone and it's almost got more to do with the silence of the movie, like Drive. Like the quietness and having it be like a real intense mood piece, but mixed with sci-fi. And I think that's such a cool idea, like this very isolated feeling, like only following Samus, or at least for the majority of the movie type.
I mean, it
film.
Would be appropriately like the second half of the original Alien movie, where Sigourney Weaver is the only one, spoilers, from 1979, is the only one left and runs around the ship and like talks to herself and the cat at points. It'd be really cool.
Yeah.
You know, there was an attempt at a Metroid movie before.
Really?
It was supposed to come out in 2006 and it was supposed to be directed by John Woo.
Oh, wow.
You know, made Mission Impossible 2.
I remember this,
yeah. So, yeah, I talked to the producer, Brad Foxhoven, about it, and he said the... Nintendo was very, very worried about licensing the franchise. And the license was already owned pre-Mario Brothers movies, so they kind of inherited that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in working with Nintendo, John Woo kept getting frustrated over the things he couldn't do with the character. They were so restrictive on the things that they would allow you to do with Samus that Woo just kind of got frustrated and gave up on the project. And, you know, it disappeared and fell by the wayside. So he's probably right.
Yeah.
And that was 2006?
Yeah, it was in 2004. It was supposed to come out in 2006.
Okay.
So it's been a while.
That was definitely like in the midst of the Prime Trilogy era.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for
when
sure.
Did we get 3? That was a Wii.
That was a Wii title.
That was later on.
That was the Wii era.
Because I know like 2009, 2010, that's when they started Metroid. Oop. What's it called? The one we don't like to remember very
Other
often.
M?
Zero Mission?
Other M. Yes.
That's one.
Yeah, that one.
We like talking about Zero Mission.
I love talking about Zero Mission.
His description sounds exactly what I figure Nintendo would want out of a Metroid movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, not a lot of talking to other characters. Yeah. Like, those were the weakest parts of Metroid Prime 3, right? Where you talk to the other... the other soldiers and stuff.
Yeah, and also...
And other M,
I would just
obviously.
Encapsulate the... feeling of the tension of all the Metroid games. Yep. I mean, yep. Most of the games, you're just by yourself exploring
running away
weird
from
areas.
Yeah.
And
fighting
exploding
weird things.
Yep.
Yeah, Other M, 3, and Fusion are the talkiest ones in terms of people constantly checking in, or in Other M's case being like, hey, you're allowed to use your ice missiles now. And you're like, thanks, dude. But Jordan Vogt Roberts did a really great job with Kong Skull Island in terms of making a big, campy, almost video game movie.
It should have not been a good movie. And
totally.
It's actually really fun. Yeah,
yeah, it's about like two or three groups of soldiers and scientists traveling through what's effectively a giant video game world and going through boss fights.
Yeah.
Like, that's really all that movie is. And so he understands like giant creatures, you know, he understands like what it's like to take a group of people and put them on a weird isolated planet full of dread. And I think this would be a perfect pairing. So who knows if anything like this happens. In the meantime, Jordan is tweeting out concept art from Metal Gear for the next 30 days.
Oh, cool.
So it's all this stuff you've never seen before, fan art, concept art, every single day. So go follow him on Twitter.
That's really awesome. Cool.
Yeah, good guy.
By the way, I'm so happy that they're actually making a Metal Gear movie now. Like, finally, it's happening. Oh,
we'll see.
Is it still in maybe?
It's
land?
Still a maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's all closer than ever. Obviously, like, you look at all the parties involved on that, not everyone is getting along perfectly. So I think it would be a matter of Konami saying, like, sure, go for it. And Kojima being like, sure, I agree with that. I mean, there's just a lot of – you're looking at two groups that very – publicly fell out a few years ago.
Yeah.
And then Jordan in the middle being like, but I love Metal Gear. So we'll see what happens.
Here. All right. Well, we can keep our hopes high. But let's go ahead and jump over to our leading games, because we have so many games to catch up on. And we're going to go ahead and kick it off with our pick of the week. And that is none other than Bomb Chicken. We have been waiting so long to talk about this game. Man, I know we're all really excited about it. I think we've all... Casey, have you played it? Yes. All right, cool. So this is Bomb Chicken. Brian, I know you. This is your thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead, take the mic.
You and I played this at the Nindies event a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Which is really cool to see, because coming out of that event, I think... my favorite games there were The Messenger, which is not out yet, which I can't wait for, which is, you know, a Ninja Gaiden style sort of action platforming game with time travel elements, of course. And this game, Bomb Chicken, which is a platformer puzzle game where you're a chicken who lays eggs that explode that you can use to climb on things, kill bad guys, or accidentally commit suicide.
All the time.
All the time.
Yes.
In my case.
And so this game is it's triumphantly 16-bit era in basically everything, in every way it presents itself. And it took me a little bit to fall in love with it, because I feel like it's a little unforgiving at the beginning in terms of checkpoints. But once it gets going, it really opens up. And you're kind of nudged to explore every corner of it and sort of think outside of your comfort zone in terms of how you interact with this game.
Yeah.
It does that really classic Nintendo thing where it takes a fundamental gameplay mechanic that's very simple and then forces you to sort of tear that idea open in every way possible.
And like you start doing things with the bombs, and if you're watching this in video form, you'll already see some of the things you can do, obviously, with the bombs. But like, you'll start to learn how you can utilize the bombs. The bombs will kill you if they blow up under your butt, and they'll blow up anything else as well. And so sometimes you get to levels that are entirely constructed out of destructible blocks. And so you got to really plan them out, like what bomb you kick and how high you build your bomb towers. And I love the purity of this game not having a jump button either.
Yeah.
Like, you poop out a bomb. To get one level higher, and you can, when you get good, you can go so fast in this game.
It at times plays almost like a side-scrolling Bomberman in terms
of, it feels like Bomberman.
Yeah, like in just how, I mean, you can create a line of bombs, you can create a stack of bombs, you can kick bombs and move them around. There's a mobility to them, but you can also use them to like lay down switches and kill bad guys. And like with certain things, like when you're making towers, you know that you can only be on that tower for so long, and you can only make it so high. So you're rethinking a lot. That said, when you die, I feel like the checkpoints are pretty liberal. They get a little tougher later on. But it's really the kind of game that I could not get enough of, and I want to go back and 100% because I just really adore it.
Yeah. It's also pretty hard too.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, because the entire time, like, you can see if you're watching the video format, there's like these blue gems that you collect, and if you gain a certain amount, you can, like, every at the end of every level, you're able to essentially upgrade your health bars.
Yeah,
which, you know, sounds simple enough, but it's actually really hard to collect you know, all the gems that you need, because at a certain point, it's like you need 80 of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you might only find
giant chicken god, which is really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. And there's this, like Per and Brian were saying, there's like a ton of verticality in this game. It's really surprising, and it still manages to surprise me. I'm still playing through it. I haven't finished it. But with every level, it just gets weirder and crazier and more challenging. It's definitely not easy. And I highly, highly recommend you check it out.
The things it has you do with the bombs are really creative and really unique.
Yeah.
And it's one of those games that once you get to learn the mechanics, you can breeze through some of the levels once you understand how the bombs affect the way you move.
Yeah.
And it's really satisfying to go through an area where you failed multiple times and then you can just run through it perfectly. And it's really cool and interesting, and the animations of the chicken are really really cute.
Yeah,
I always feel really bad for the NPC chickens. You accidentally blow up.
They turn into roast
chicken. Roast, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but you can't do anything with it. It's just casualties.
Yeah.
That's what they get for being regular chickens and not bomb chickens.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I feel like this game does teach you almost like a language, right?
Yep.
Like
you
learn more and more. You're not actually upgrading your character specifically, but you are learning how to interact with the environment more. Sort of along the way, like something like The Witness did, where the more you keep playing it, the more you're like, I kind of fundamentally understand how this game is speaking to me right now.
Yep. Right.
So, yeah.
It's like, I'm so much better at Zelda games now than I was the first time I played
them. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Look out, check out Bomb Chicken on Nintendo Switch. It's like $15, which is very reasonable.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Next up is Pocket Rumble, another game that we've been kind of sitting on for a little while. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not sure how many of you guys have checked this out. Have you played it? Yeah? All right. So I played a little bit of it earlier today and then a couple days ago, too. But I really got into it today. It's kind of like a simple, like, I don't want to call it simple because it's not really simple. It's a two-button fighting game.
I would say it's an incredibly stripped-down fighting game.
Because
I don't know if it's simple. I think it still has depth, but it feels like something that you would have played on like the Neo Geo Pocket.
That's exactly right. The style and everything is a Neo Geo Pocket
even,
color
even
game.
Right down to the thick gritting of the pixel art in this game. I love the art style. I think the characters are really clever. The music and art's really good. I think the AI in this game is infuriating.
Yes, so brutal.
Yeah, it's not only that, but cheap. Like, it feels like playing like a guy you hate in the arcade back in the 90s.
Just crouching and leg swiping over and over again.
Who just keeps doing E. Honda's 100 hand slap or something like that.
Yeah.
I was every time I play this game, I end up getting frustrated because the people you're fighting are just constantly spamming the same exact move over and over. And in a game that only has two or three moves, and each one of those moves has the same sound effect, it gets a little grating. That said, I imagine it's a lot more fun with friends and in situations where you're not fighting a dumb robot.
Yeah. I think it's like for its price, and I think it's also $15. I might be wrong on that.
I think this one might be 10. Yeah.
Okay. If it's 10, it's even better because it's probably the most affordable best fighting game on Switch.
Definitely,
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got online play too, so if you hate playing against the AI, you can take your game online.
Or your friends.
Yeah, or your friends. But I mean, you know, that said, I think that there's something to it if you're into fighting games and if you want to try and master like something like this that's a little bit more technical and really more precise about choosing your moves because you're so limited with them. Check out Pocket Rumble. It's not a bad game at all. It's actually really interesting.
Nice.
It's
kind of cool to see a blast from the past. I remember the Neo Geo Pocket. It was just such a fun little machine. And it was the first, like, there really weren't that many great fighting games on the kind of the Game Boy and the DS, and Neo Geo Pocket had all these great fighting games.
I know. And it was such a weird system, you know, like not a lot of people really know about it or owned one because it wasn't made by Sega or Nintendo.
Sniff.
And I think these graphics would work really well in handheld mode.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just put it down and give someone one of the Joy-Cons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It works so much better because sometimes fighting games that are really detailed, like I can't imagine playing Smash in portable mode with another person.
Oh man,
that's going to be weird.
Yeah. With eight players.
Yeah, no.
And yet, people will be doing it this fall.
Yep.
Or Christmas, whenever it's out.
Maybe by people, you mean us. My eyes are just bad.
Maybe.
All right. Well, let's roll on over to Pool Panic, which is out today. It's $15, and it is the newest game by Adult Swim Games. Now, this game is very, very much like an Adult Swim cartoon in that it's completely insane, and the people who made it were on drugs. but in a really good way, because it's actually quite a lot of fun. Essentially, it takes the game of pool, and it throws billiards in like real life situations. If you're watching the video right now,
you can see a bunch of little campers right now. The cue ball.
Yeah, you play as a cue ball, and all of the other balls in the game, weird sentence, are like friends or people or townsfolk or something like that. And it's level based. You basically have like a Super Mario World style overworld where you go from stage to stage and have to knock all of these balls into the holes, and then you get the 8 ball in last. Some of the balls are aggressive, so they'll like get in the way. If you walk near them, they'll start bouncing and scattering things. There's objects around the environment. It took me a minute to get used to the controls because it's very flicky. Like you have to pull the stick back in the opposite direction. But after a little while, it starts to feel good. It feels very rubber bandy.
I love that the hat falls off every time.
I know. It's so cute. Good. There's so much charm in this game. It's like 10% gross. but it's, I really like this game. And every level feels kind of unique, and there's challenges you can do within those levels, like the number of times it would take you to knock all the balls in the hole or whatever it is. It's weird.
The expressions are so cute. It is a lot of fun. I've been enjoying this one quite a bit. Like if you're watching the video right now, you can see where we're showing a lake level, and you can actually go inside of the lake, which is really weird. If you shoot your ball in the lake, you'll find that there's more cue balls in there or more billiard balls in there. So it's just got so many weird layers, and with each level you play, it introduces something new or something you just haven't seen before to keep it very interesting. And it's just like a hilarious game to play. If you're looking for something fun,
that red ball has a fishing pole.
I'm sold. I'm going to buy this. How much is it?
$15.
$15. Okay.
Yeah. It's called Pool Panic. I know we always try to. I try to be better about saying the game multiple times, and I forget this. I haven't even seen this stage. This is insane.
Yeah, it gets even crazier. There's like a stage where you're just in a barn, and there aren't even any holes in the ground or anything like that. You just have to like knock. You have to use your billiard ball to like knock other pig billiard balls out of the barn, which is just a crazy mess. But somehow it's a lot of fun. Here it is right now, showing up on.
You probably look at your Switch and you're like, well, what's the best fighting game? Or what's the best puzzle platformer? What's the best Metroidvania? If you're wondering what the most deranged billiards game is, this is it.
What would you even call, like, what genre is this?
This is weird pool.
It's on tabletop parlor game with walking pool balls.
Exactly. I haven't even checked if
there's... The best anthropomorphic ball game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
I haven't even checked if there's just a straight up normal, realistic billiards mode in this game? Probably not.
Nope.
Maybe tucked away somewhere.
There's some sort of a multiplayer mode. I actually haven't checked it out.
Cool.
But I think that they do offer like a basic billiards table there.
Cool.
And also like a lot of the levels here open up too. Like you can see I just cracked open that fence and there's just like different things that just start popping out and happening. It's very, very strange. I don't think I've ever played a game like this.
So weird.
Yeah, super weird. But I do have a cool little surprise for you guys. One of the developers from this game, his name is Angus Dick. His Twitter handle is AngusDick18 if you want to follow him. He works for Adult Swim Games. He actually drew us as these characters. Yeah,
really?
Can you go ahead and get that photo on screen? There we are. Right there. So from left to right, it's me, Philip, and then Casey, Pear, and then, of course, Brian.
Oh, my God.
I think they did a great job. Yeah, it's super cool. I'm really just, I love this thing.
Hey, that makes me really happy. Like, I was literally playing his game last night for like an hour. This is so cool.
So that's what we would look like if we were in this game.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty accurate.
That's totally made my day.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to do that, Angus. Really
he got my hair perfect, by the way.
Yeah, no, your hair is really good.
Good job there.
Yeah. And look at Casey's glasses.
That's my confused expression.
Yeah, I think Pear definitely looks the best. Really it's spot on right there.
Oh, my God. I love how like I'm like 20% Beavis and Butthead.
You got that grin going on. Right?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, Pear's expression is pretty perfect.
No, that's it.
This is so unsettling and wonderful. Thank you, Angus.
So that's Pool Panic. It's out right now on Nintendo Switch and I believe other consoles or PC. Nintendo Switch and PC. It's $15. Pick it up if you're just looking for a really weird but fun, just crazy trip through a game.
Yep.
So next up on the list is Mugsters. Now, Mugsters also just came out this week, and it kind of took me by surprise because just taking a look at this game, it's really easy to just sort of pass it along and, you know, not take a second look, but it's got a lot to it. It's a physics-based puzzle game that takes on the top-down view, and you play as this, like, little character. I don't think he even has a name, but you're running through like a level based world essentially, and you have to do complete different objectives, like rescue other humans, you have to destroy satellites, you have to like take off from an airplane successfully from an island and then land it later. And it uses physics in a really creative and interesting way. Like you can see if you're watching the video podcast, I'm going to get into a car in a second and drive it straight through a wall. And so it's just very, very peculiar as to how it like sort of uses physics to progress you through the game, but it does it in a very intelligent way, which I think is really cool.
So it has real particle physics. I mean, the game is presented almost like in a cel-shaded fashion,
yeah.
But like
yeah.
Each object or each wall that you break apart, the pieces actually behave and according to gravity, and so you really got to figure out how to attack things and how to smash into mm-hmm. things
yeah.
to get ahead.
Yeah, this is really interesting.
Like
yeah,
that it seems really cool. Water.
Mm-hmm.
Looks really cool.
Oh yeah! Wow.
And you can complete each. Man. You can complete each objective like you know differently. It's all about how you want to do it. You can if you're trying to save humans, they're all like in these little weird hibernation capsules. So you can pick up a rock and throw it at the capsule, or you can just drive your car straight through it and you know blow it up essentially. And somehow the human survives. I don't know how, but he does. And it's got a bunch of explosive barrels in there that you can like sort of mess with. It's just one of those games that's really fun to play with the physics, but on top of the physics, it has a really interesting story that just develops as you go, and of course the physics are mm-hmm. just really great. So check it out. It's Mugsters. It's out right now on Switch if you're interested in like physics puzzle games. I think this one is really cool. So did you play Miles and Kilo, Brian? Yeah,
I did.
Yeah,
why do you even ask him?
Yes, I did.
All right, did you play every game on Switch, Brian?
No. I read the other day that there's like there's 900 something games on Switch right now.
Oh really?
I mean, yes.
Yeah. So I probably played a
890.
No,
you played.
I probably played like 300 games.
300. That sounds right.
It's a lot.
That sounds
holy
possible.
Moly.
So what's your take on Miles and Kilo?
I was just looking up the information a second ago and I couldn't remember, but I believe this is from the same developers as, I want to say, not Balloon Kid or something like that, but there was an 8-bit platforming game on Switch already that was a port of something from iOS that was an auto-running game that launched a couple months ago that was a couple bucks. This is those developers' newest game. This one's a little different because it's not entirely auto-running. You play as a boy and his dog, and the boy levels are puzzle or platforming levels that you can basically control left to right. And when you get the dog on the leash, he auto runs and you have to basically kind of like runner or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Time all your jumps and do everything, collect everything. This game's got a little bit of Adventure Island in it, I would say. And I like this game. I don't love it. I found it to be a little unforgiving in terms of it feels very simple in presentation, but it's a little harder than I wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
In that it pushes back a little hard and then you have to restart the levels from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a pain in the ass when
not a fan.
You just want to chill out and play a cool platforming game.
Yeah.
So I would like, and I rarely say this because I love tough games, like Bloodborne's one of my favorite games of all time. I would like this game to be a little bit less unforgiving. You know, or a little bit more forgiving is a simpler way of saying that. But yeah, that said, there's a discount on this game if you bought their previous game, so go check that out. And even then, I think it's only a couple bucks.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I think it's like $5 or $6. So give it a look. If you want something really challenging, I think it's fun and the art direction is really good, but I think it's just a little too punishing.
Okay. There is a good boy.
Yes, there's a good dog in that game.
Now, a game that I think has been on Steam Early Access for quite like over a year now, just made it to Switch. It's called 20XX. Now, this game is very, very cool. It's kind of like, I don't know, I don't want to call it like a reimagining, but it takes a lot of elements from Mega Man X.
Yes.
And it adds like a lot of modern elements as well, like procedural generation and different things like that. You've been playing a lot of this.
Yeah,
right?
I would say, sorry, Per. I would say this is probably the best Mega Man like cover song that we've ever had.
Yeah.
No offense, Mighty Number Nine.
I was just going to bring that up.
But it, like you said, like Philip said, it modernizes the game, the genre a lot by adding a lot of new stuff. So it's got some sort of roguelike elements, but there are permanent upgrades you can unlock and a store that you can buy stuff from that will allow you to basically keep adding stuff to your character so he or she always has it forever. Nice. I wasn't crazy. I feel like the art in this game gets a little like flash gamey, you know, it feels a little generic at times, but it's so damn fun. Mm-hmm. And the platforming feels really solid. Like shooting mechanics feel really good. The bosses are all like, they're all introduced like Mega Man bosses. Like they come in, they have that full screen and you know, you jump through the door and then you fight them and then you move on to the next thing.
Are the bosses based on everyday household objects?
Kind of.
I'm Doorman.
Yeah, there are a lot more nonsense, like Shatterbeak, the Icy Avenger. There are a lot more nonsense.
It's a little bit more.
They're robot masters, but it's like this one's part bird.
All right.
And I think that the overall, they're a lot more interesting in terms of like attack patterns than most Mega Man bosses are, at least the old school ones. But yeah, I really like this game. It's really good.
It's also got online play too, which I found is actually really fun as well. It's seamless too, which is interesting. You go to a separate place in your sort of like hub area and you just connect to online and the game doesn't even load. Another person just pops up right next to you.
Yeah.
And it's got like two different playable characters that you can choose. I forget what their names are, like Ninja and something else. Mega and Man. But they're very, very closely based off of like Mega Man X characters, and they play pretty similarly too. But yeah, I really like it. It's also got like wireless play between switches where you don't have to connect to a Wi-Fi network. You can just connect straight to each other's switches. So it's great for co-op play if you just have a buddy next to you.
Mm-hmm. Like the old Game Boy Advance days.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not even that big of a Mega Man fan. Honestly, it's hard for me to admit that publicly, but I'm not. But this game really grabbed me and I'm really, really enjoying it. I think it's a great, great game. Yeah,
I think like just like sitting down for a run in this game is really fun. Mm-hmm. The Switch has really proven itself to be a great platform for games like that.
Yeah.
Where you can just sit down, play for 10, 15 minutes, die, and still feel like you accomplished something.
Yeah, yep. Totally. Now, another game that came out, I think this week, is Hand of Fate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hand of Fate 2, actually. Mm-hmm.
Hand
sequel.
Of Fate
yeah.
2, yeah.
Have you been able to check that out?
I played it last night. It's really interesting.
It's a really strange game. It's almost like you're in a Dungeons & Dragons session with a friend set in the Middle Ages, and you've got this, you know, this dealer who's kind of like the snarky storyteller, and he puts the cards down and tells you a story, and according to the cards, you pick where the story goes, you make decisions, there are battle sequences whenever you have an encounter with someone. It's a really cool, interesting concept.
It kept
this
surprising
so
me.
Cool.
It
I
really is.
Play
yeah,
this really bad.
It genuinely kept surprising me with how much depth there was here and how many surprises there were. At first, I was like, "Oh, this is a lot of build up for a card game," which it essentially is for most of the time. But then it throws to, you know, battles where you're with a team or you're on your own fighting a wave of enemies, or there's like a dice roll mini game where you can go in and customize your character and, you know, build out all these settings and stuff like that. And
the two main modes, there's like an endless mode where, you know, the cards randomize the way the story is told, but there's also campaign where there's a kind of a story, very simple through line through the game. But yeah, I just love the vibe of it. It's almost like somebody's putting down like tarot cards for you and saying, you've encountered the witch, what are you gonna do? And like you have to make a decision, and there is no right or wrong path. Like you can help a character against bandits, for example. If you choose to help, it might result in a battle. It might result in just kind of rolling three dice and trying to beat a number. Mm-hmm. And the battles are very simple. It's like simple attacks, but you can also get more weapons for your character. You can move from a sword to an axe and so forth. It's got some depth in it. It looks pretty nice on the Switch too.
I imagine it's like what you imagined you were doing when you were playing Dungeons and Dragons back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Or it's like, oh, we now go to battle a giant troll. This game just lets you do it, which is really cool. And then brings you right back to the card game. So
yeah, we reviewed the PC version, I think, last year and gave it an 8 out of 10.
Cool.
And the Switch version seems like a very competent port.
Awesome.
It's got a little stutter in it when loading, a little skipping.
How are the main loads overall, like when you load in between the card sections?
Pretty good. Yep.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
Cool. Yep.
Yeah, good game.
Yeah, that's Hand of Fate. It's out now on Switch, and I believe
it's Hand of Fate 2?
Hand of Fate 2, yes. Okay. Excuse me. And it's, I believe, $39.99. So, yeah.
It's not a small game.
Check it out. It surprised me. I had no idea that there was actually that much action in it. So, mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. So, I know it's been a while since we've had a skip of the week, but we have a skip of the week this week. And I'm very excited to announce it. It's called Guts of Glory. And it comes out on Friday. So if you're watching this on YouTube, that's today. If you're watching this on IGN, that's tomorrow. And you should be watching this on IGN because you can watch it first. But yeah, this is Guts. Guts and Glory. Yeah, and it's one of those games that tries to be silly. It tries to be stupid and fun at the same time. Kind of like Octodad or those games that kind of troll you as you play.
Like Goat Simulator, right? Yeah. Like it knows it's kind of broken.
Yeah, but this, I don't know if they wanted it to be this broken because this game is very broken. Like, those are frame stutters. Yeah, you can see them happening. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just drops straight down to like 4 frames per second. It froze up on me twice while I was trying to record gameplay, which is very rare for a Switch game to happen.
So it's one of those games that's fun to watch somebody stream just because of the unpredictability and the crazy stuff you can do, right?
Exactly. I would be a lot more forgiving with this game if, like, let's say when you die and you have to reset it, if it was fast or instant, mm-hmm. but this isn't. There's a good like 10-12 second load before you can retry, and you're gonna die a lot because it controls.
You're gonna die
terribly.
On a park bench. I mean, that's kind of the point, right?
It was you who walked in when I gasped heavily. Yeah, I was playing this game, and Brian walks in, and I was like,
it's like "What happened?"
I just slightly touched a park bench, and my arm exploded off, and now I'm dead on the floor, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and so like, I'll put it this way: I think that this game is really funny and it's really fun. I think it's really hard to get to really nail, like, Goat Simulator hit that perfect balance of jankiness and intentional jankiness, but also still feeling like a package that was competently put together. Whereas this game, you know, is way too rough around the edges to recommend. That said, when you're like, you play as an old man and your wife is in a radio flyer behind you and you go into a park bench and you both explode, it's very funny. But like, if you can't get right back into the action. Yeah. So I think it's like really hard to make a bad game on purpose.
But they succeeded.
I mean,
well, hats off.
It's sort of like when you want to make, like, how do you make a movie that's like so bad that it's The Room, that people are quoting it, they love it, you know?
Yeah,
like you look at something like Snakes on a Plane, which was almost too good to be bad.
I love Snakes on a Plane.
See, but like, I think people walked out of the movie and they're like, that movie was a little better than I thought it would be. I thought it would be just awful, and I thought it'd be so bad that it was good, but it was mostly just okay.
And funny.
And so this I think this game is just like, it's just too bad.
Yeah, no,
it's just too much bad.
It just doesn't work very well, like, at least on Switch. I know it's available on other consoles as well, and maybe the load times will be better there. But there's just so much about this game that, like, it misses. It definitely doesn't hit it with the controls. It doesn't hit it with the frames. I mean, obviously you can see.
This is the kind of game that my sons would play for days, and I'd be mad that they're playing that instead of all the
games. No, I would be all... I was really disappointed to find out this was our skip of the week, because I wanted this game to be good.
Yeah.
Or no, I wanted it to run well enough to be bad.
All right.
Yeah, no, I was legitimately excited when I downloaded it. I was totally went in unbiased. I knew what kind of game it was, but I was ready to enjoy it, and it just got less and less enjoyable the more I played. So
it kept,
be
like,
careful.
It froze on you, and it...
Yeah, it froze on me. Yeah, like that's multiple times. Yeah, so it's $15. I highly recommend you spend that $15 on something like Bomb Chicken, which is our pick of the week. You know, maybe if they update it in the future, it'll get better. But for now, just stay far away.
Mm-hmm. Or if there's a really good sale that has it for like less than that.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good idea. Like, Switch
or
eShop.
Watch somebody play it on Twitch.
Yep.
That's probably the best way to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I asked you guys on our NVC podcast forums, which you should be a member of on Facebook, to ask us some questions for Question Block. And thank you so much. So many of you did submit your questions. We're going to try and get to as many as we possibly can. And we're going to go ahead and kick it off with Evan B., who asks, what game on Switch have you put the most time into, not counting Breath of the Wild? For me, it's Binding of Isaac.
Mm.
Ooh, good choice.
Speaking of my sons, my oldest son played hundreds of hours of that.
In the interest of making this interesting, can we also axe Mario Odyssey from this?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
All right, gone then. That okay. was probably my
yeah. There goes
two.
My yeah. yeah.
then my number two
gonna be like not all Zelda, but all right,
my
Mario.
My number two would be Splatoon 2, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Splatoon yeah. 2. I just think the amount of multiplayer hours, and it's got a single player mode and DLC and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me it's a tie between Splatoon 2 and Xenoblade. I ended up putting like, I don't know, 50 hours into Xenoblade, and I'm sure I'm going to pass that with Octopath Traveler in the next week or so. So, yeah. What about you guys?
This makes me a little sick to think about it. But, I put in about 65 hours into Pokemon Quest.
Wow.
Now, for your for her credit, though, she did work on the Wiki's Guide, right?
The Wiki's Guide and the review.
Yes.
So I beat it.
Yes.
At least I got the credits to roll, and that's how long it took me to get to that point.
Wow. Okay.
You know, I probably put 15 hours into that game. Yeah. Isn't that weird? Because I don't, no. I'm not really in
that's
the Pokemon.
Still quite a bit.
And then I just stopped. I don't know what happened. Like one day I was just like, oh, I'm done.
I pretty much rage quit because I couldn't get my Alakazam to learn Psychic.
Oh,
wow.
No.
I think I spent 20 hours trying to do just that. And I just gave up.
That's what set you off. Yeah. Not the 60 hours of playing a
Did you spend real money on it?
Well, you can't actually spend that much. I spent $30 on the pack that came with everything.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning?
Yeah. Like, I put like 5 hours into it, and I was like, okay, I like this game. I'm going to keep playing. I'll get the thing that'll make the grind less difficult.
Yep.
And, yeah, spent $30 on it, and... Mm. You can't, I think after, there's about $50 worth of content in that game, and then you cannot, there's nothing else to buy.
Oh.
So, yeah, you can't buy duplicates.
Nice of them.
Yeah, it's very nice of them, and I'm really glad that they didn't have more stuff to buy, because I might have bought it.
I wish more free-to-play games would be like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't very grabby, which is cool.
What was your longest play time? You played 400 games for 1 hour each.
Honestly, Fortnite?
I can see that. Yeah.
Like, believe it or not,
that, huh? Mr. Level 50 over there.
Yeah, I mean, I hit level 50 on the last battle pass. I'm 22 on this one.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's the kind of thing where I'll put it this way. That game came out, that game was released a week after my daughter was, and from being born, not jail. Those worlds do not go well together, because you with a newborn, you need a game you can pause, and Fortnite. So if you kill me in that game, it's not because I'm bad. It's because I'm just like standing there because I have to pick her up because she's screaming. So it's very hard to work those things together. But I was on paternity leave and I was home, and that was just the perfect game to sort of sink a bunch of time into and not have to think too much about.
Yeah.
And I talked last week about why I love it so much. But yeah, I think it's really the perfect game for that platform.
Nice.
Yeah. I love very Fortnite. Cool. Can't wait to play it when I get home.
So a lot of you guys asked a very similar question to this next one. So I decided to definitely put this one in there because I think it's really great. But I'm going to give Daniel P. the credit because I'm reading his question for it. Nintendo and Reggie have been teasing other surprises, unannounced titles for the remainder of the year. What do you folks think they may be, and where would they squeeze them in on the calendar? Okay. So... we've all been sort of talking about this for the last week or so, ever since it was announced, that Nintendo is still cooking up stuff for this year. Now, Pear, I know you had mentioned that it could possibly be like maybe some Mario Odyssey DLC, or maybe some Mario Kart DLC, or maybe...
Mario Kart DLC to tie in with the online plan launch. No, but honestly, I think the unannounced games will be smaller ones. I think this is the stuff that you'll see in a direct where, like, Picross Zelda Edition or something is going to come out, or Picross Nintendo Edition. Like, it'll be smaller games like that. By the way, I'm A-okay with that.
I'm done
with all the Picross stuff on all the machines now, so...
They just launched a new one, didn't they? A new Picross game?
Where? Here?
On Switch.
I would know. No.
Checking. Oh, no.
He's going to check right now.
Oh, you mean the imposter game?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a real Picross
game. You're starved for Picross. No. I don't know.
That's not the same.
Didn't you play... You played the other one, right?
Yeah, I played the other imposter game.
What was the other one?
It was just not that good.
Pick-a-Picks or whatever? Didn't you put like 100 hours
in that?
I think
that's what it was. Pick-a-Picks Deluxe.
Yeah, so you'll take what you can get.
They keep on releasing DLC for that, too. No, but I think it'll be something like that. You know, like when we got surprised like Box Boy in the past. Like, it'll be that sort of caliber game. Like, don't expect like Pikmin to come out of nowhere, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. Or? I totally agree. I think it's going to be stuff like Dr. Luigi and, you know, Box Boy and... There was a lot of like WiiWare-ish games that came to Wii U and Wii that aren't on Switch yet. that I'd like to see. I would love ports of the mainline Mario games that we saw on Wii U. I have a feeling they'll build up a little more fanfare for that. I mean, even Captain Toad, they built up some, you know,
But I could imagine something like that where they don't want to make a big deal out of a re-release of a GameCube game again,
yeah,
or a Wii U game. So, like, I mean, hopefully it is something like Sunshine, like a game that we haven't seen in a while.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I mean, I'm really bummed that we don't have new Super Mario Brothers Wii U, we don't have new Super Luigi, and we don't have Super Mario 3D World. I just don't see them doing those things this year.
There was a rumor around new Super Mario making the cut for Switch.
Yeah, because taking those two games and putting them out in a package would be fantastic. The Luigi, I don't know if you guys played new Super Luigi. Did you guys play that?
No.
Oh yeah, my God, the DLC thing.
Yeah, it was DLC for New Super Mario Brothers for Wii U, which launched with the Wii U. 2D Mario game, four player, blah, blah, blah. The Luigi version was basically all the levels were ramped up to the point where it's like when you only have 60 seconds left in a Mario game and the timer's going really fast and the music's sped up. Yeah, and they're all just this crazy mad dash to get to the goal as fast as possible. Really smart, really tight, really clever levels.
Yeah.
And it just lived and died on Wii U. So I'd love to see that get another life on the Switch.
No, that's a really good point. And again, that was one of the rumored titles was New Super Mario. There were a couple other things that, you know, are now rearing the heads, that like the first South Park game, you know, that are now coming out. So
there's also Yoshi, which is like, you know, we heard at E3 that was still in development and they were kind of taking
next year.
It's next year, next year, yeah.
So any Monster Hunter games coming now?
For Switch, Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate, August 27th.
There you go.
Yeah, no, I think you guys are spot on. I don't think we're going to get, like, Pikmin or Animal Crossing, unfortunately. But, you know, the Nintendo has a ton of games in the catalog. Like, that you're right, we're on the Wii U that lived and died there that they could totally bring back.
Metroid Prime Trilogy was another rumored title.
What was the name of the Metroid game we just got on 3DS?
Samus Returns.
Yeah, put that on Switch.
Yeah, that would make total sense for Switch. It would work completely well. You don't need the map on the lower screen the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Easy money. Launch it in October.
Yeah.
It's free.
Enhance the graphics a little bit. So we're going to go ahead and...
Octopath Traveler?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's some good Octopath questions here. We got two back-to-back. So Mike S. asks, who's your ultimate Octopath party? So Casey, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Oh, man. Okay. So I've been playing with Hanit, who is the hunter... Cyrus the Scholar and Ophelia the Cleric as my main three. And then I've been kind of experimenting with the other characters. And I think with my fourth, I'm going to stick with Therion, who's kind of a jack of all trades. So then I have a healer, a jack of all trades who can open those purple chests and steal stuff. And then I have a physical DPS in Hunter in Hadid. And then I have an elemental DPS in Cyrus, who also gives away the enemy weaknesses.
Yeah,
cool.
And
are you writing the guide?
It seems like
good advice, actually.
I'm working on it. And Cyrus has the highest elemental attack bonus, and Hanit has the highest physical attack bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And Alphen can also revive and heal your character, the Apothecary.
And they're both really good for multi-enemy attacks, too.
Yes.
They got powerful multi-enemy attacks right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
And Ophelia is kind of underrated, being able to summon villagers and soldiers that she gathers before, and then being able to heal, too.
Oh, and people's healing abilities is actually based on their elemental defense.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that up, and for more tips, visit the Octopath Traveler Wiki.
Good plug.
We have maps that actually show you where all the hidden chests are in every location as well.
The purple chests?
Those two, yeah.
Yes, nice. Mm-hmm. Very cool. I'm sorry.
Oh, and you can actually unlock secondary jobs. So if you think you're missing an element or a type of an attack, you can just balance your team out by getting the secondary jobs, which you can also find the locations of those shrines on the Octopath Traveler Wiki.
Very cool.
I feel like I know everything.
I know.
I'm ready.
So the other question is from Greg C. And he asks, what is your least liked or biggest issue with Octopath?
That's a good question.
I think, honestly, this might be a little controversial. But my biggest issue with Octopath is that I wish that they either went all in with the VO or just no VO at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's a little weird that it's sometimes there and sometimes not there. I would have rather just had all of it, honestly, other than, you know, than what we have now, which is just like a very sectional, like chosen pieces of VO.
Oh, I'm playing in Japanese. But
yeah.
Yeah. Just the first, they always say like the first word or, you know,
right. Which
it's
I know.
A popular thing in Japanese games.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, save. Yeah, it makes sense, I guess, for certain parts, but I kind of would have loved to hear like an entirely fleshed out VO.
So mine, I think the game is pretty respectful when it comes to random enemy encounters, but I still would prefer seeing the shadows of the enemies on the map, because like sometimes you're like, oh crap, I forgot there. I just spotted a treasure chest and I'm just going to quickly run there, and you know, you get the random attacks. Like I wish there was just a very turnkey, quick way to avoid that right from the map. Like,
if you have a scholar on your team, they unlock a support skill that lessens the amount of random encounters you have.
There you go.
Nice.
But that's not the same.
No, it's not.
But you can't like abuse that, because then you'll never level up.
Yeah.
Like I was so happy when I got that, and then I realized I don't
want to
wear
it
all the time.
It's not.
This game does not. I mean, they were games in the 16-bit age where you took two steps and you could get back-to-back encounters. Mm-hmm. It's not that bad.
Yeah.
But it is like those rare moments. You have a run button in this game for those rare moments where I'm like, oh, I want to quickly get that. Or I forgot to talk to this guy on the map. And then attack again.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead. You sure?
No. One of the things that I find a little bit annoying is that the cutscenes, there are lags in between the speech bubbles popping up.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so
right,
if you read faster than they talk and you want to just get through it, you can't.
Yeah, you and I were talking about this this morning. It kind of breaks the flow a little bit.
Yeah.
And also it'll fade to black and come back into gameplay, and you're like, you didn't really need to do that because you're all on the same engine. It's not like it's throwing to a FMV or something and coming back.
Yeah.
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 But I dig it.
Good point.
I'm just getting
everything
started.
Else I really like.
Other than that,
I picked that teacher that has those weird students that are trying to hook up with him. That's weird.
Cyrus is amazing.
I'll keep going then.
He's got a funny story.
Sherlock Holmes-ish.
Mm.
Sherlockian.
I like him.
All right. On that note, that is our show this week. Thank you very much for watching, listening. We are a weekly show on IGN.com, and you can catch us first on IGN every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and the following day on YouTube.com/NintendoVoiceChat at 3 p.m. So on that note, thank you guys very much for joining me, and we will see you all next week. Take care.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz, and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.